apparent progress in peace talks between Russia and Ukraine. Moscow says it will drastically reduce its military activity near Kiev. Meantime, Russia warning that NATO's supply of lethal weapons to Ukraine may create a threat to European countries in the future. And British police say they are set to issue the first 20 fines over parties held at Prime Minister Johnson's residence in violation of COVID lockdown rules. This is World News from Tehran with me, Behruz Najafi. It's good to have you with us. Now, peace talks between Russia and Ukraine in Istanbul show signs of progress. Moscow has promised to scale down its military operations following, quote, meaningful talks, while Ukraine for the first time outlines potential concessions on territories held by Russia. The Russian Deputy Defense Minister says the talks on the preparation of an agreement on the neutrality and non-nuclear status of Ukraine have moved into a practical field. Alexander Fomin added that his country would now radically reduce military activity near Kiev and the northern city of Chernihiv. Russia's chief negotiator also saying that Moscow is prepared to accelerate the timeline of a possible meeting between President Vladimir Putin and his Ukrainian counterpart, Volodymyr Zelensky. Ukraine also proposed adopting neutral status in exchange for security guarantees. The proposals would also include a 15-year consultation period on the status of Crimea. Turkish foreign minister says that his Russian and Ukrainian counterparts are expected to meet to give the latest shape to the common understanding reached in Tuesday's talks. The Russian defense minister says that Moscow is now focusing on liberating Ukraine's Donbass region after seriously degrading Kyiv's military capacity.
The main objectives of the first phase of the operation have largely been achieved. Combat potential of the Ukrainian armed forces has been substantially degraded, thus allowing us to focus our main attention and main efforts on achieving the primary goal of liberating Donbass.
In a televised meeting with officials, Shoigu also said that Russia is following statements from leaders of several NATO countries who intend to supply warplanes and air defense systems to Ukraine. He warned, however, that Russia would respond appropriately if the Western military alliance went ahead with that decision. Shoigu says that the supply of lethal weapons to Ukraine may create a threat to Europeans themselves. Meantime, Russia has continued its military operation that it says is partly aimed at decapacitating armed Nazi groups in Ukraine. Moscow says it has hit a fuel depot in Western Ukraine with cruise missiles. Kiev says that a Russian rocket also hit an administration building in the south, killing three people. More than a month into the conflict, some 4 million Ukrainians have crossed into neighboring countries. Now, meantime, Russia saying it will not supply gas to the EU for free, doubling down on its demand that payments for deliveries be made in rubles. That after the group of seven major economies dismissed the request as unacceptable. The Kremlin spokesman says the companies must understand the changed environment that's created by Western sanctions on Russia over the Ukraine conflict. Dmitry Peskov stressed that the Russian gas is better than all other options. Moscow said last week that it would only accept rubles for natural gas deliveries to unfriendly countries, including the European Union. The G7 says that the request is a unilateral and clear breach of the existing agreements. It's called on energy companies not to comply with the Russian demand. The EU received around 40% of its gas supplies from Russia in 2021. It aims to cut its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. Now, in other news, British police say that they are set to issue the first 20 fines over parties held at Prime Minister Johnson's office and residence during coronavirus lockdowns. Scotland Yard says that people who are being penalized will be kept secret. But a Downing Street says it will reveal if Johnson is on the list. Now, the announcement came 4 months after the issue sparked an outcry, with the opposition and some of Johnson's own party colleagues asking him to resign. Police investigating 12 gatherings held in breach of lockdown rules in 2020 and the following year. They say that more people could be fined. The Prime Minister initially denied any such parties, but he later acknowledged and apologized. Meantime, opposition and some ruling party members said that Johnson should resign if he's fined for breaking the rules that he imposed on the rest of the country. Now over to Yemen. Now the army there is saying it's downed the spy aircraft of the Saudi-led coalition flying over the country's central region. Army spokesman General Sari says that a U.S.-made Scan Eagle drone was downed over the province of Marib. Now that amid a three-day unilateral ceasefire announced by the Supreme Political Council of Yemen on March 26th. The council says the move was aimed at bringing a permanent truce if Riyadh agreed to end the war and blockade. Yemen has brought down tens of drones, and Saudi Arabia, along with some of its regional allies, launched a war in that country in 2015. The war has left hundreds of thousands of people dead and millions more displaced. The UN calls Yemen the largest humanitarian crisis in the world. Now, Iran welcomes Yemen's new peace initiative to end the Saudi-led war. Foreign Ministry spokesman says that the proposed plan shows the determination of Sana'a to bring an end to the war and blockade imposed by Saudi Arabia through political means. He hoped that by giving priority to humanitarian issues and promoting the exchange of prisoners, the crisis would be resolved. Sana'a has announced a unilateral ceasefire, saying it's ready for a permanent truce if Riyadh withdraws its forces, stops supporting local militia, and ends the siege. The UN says that the war on blockade had made Yemen the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Iran has condemned a summit between foreign ministers of Israel, the U.S., and four Arab states in the occupied Palestinian territory. In our news review program, we've discussed that with our guests.
Now, in this edition of the news review, the U.S. Secretary of State says the normalization process between Israel and Arab countries cannot be a substitute for peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Antony Blinken was speaking during a meeting between Israeli officials and foreign ministers from four Arab countries that have established ties with the regime. Blinken said Washington and its allies will work together to confront security challenges, including those from Iran and its regional friends. At the meeting, Israel's foreign minister, Yair Lapid, said the deepening alliance between Israel and some Arab states intimidates and deters Iran. Participants in the meeting were top diplomats from Egypt, which established ties with Israel in 1979, the UAE, Morocco, and Bahrain, which established ties in 2020. Palestinians see the normalization process as a betrayal and a stab in the back. Now, Iran has condemned the summit between the foreign ministers of Israel, the U.S., and the four Arab states in occupied Palestinian territory. Foreign Minister spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh called the gathering evil and a betrayal of the cause of Palestinian liberation. He said any attempt to normalize ties with a terrorist Zionist regime is a stab in the back of the oppressed Palestinian nation. He said such relations are a gift to a regime that continues killing Palestinians and occupying their lands. Khatibzadeh noted that Palestinians would not be liberated without the resistance of its people and the support of Islamic nations. He warned against Israel's conspiracy and evil plots, adding that Iran is ready to confront them by improving bilateral relations and coordination with regional countries. Now to discuss that further, we're joined by John White, writer and political analyst out of Edinburgh, and Mustafa Hoshteshma, journalist and political commentator from Tehran. Now, let's begin with John White. Mr. White, this summit is being held in the Naqab Desert, somewhere that is, of course, occupied territory, occupied Palestinian territory. This summit could have been held anywhere else. Is this a message that Israel is trying to send?
Indeed it is. Thanks for having me. This is Israel's attempt, and sad to say successful in the context of these four Arab states, in normalizing the occupation, normalizing the ethnic cleansing that takes place on a daily basis, normalizing the violation of international law and the deep-rooted and long-standing oppression of the Palestinian people. This is not just a betrayal of the Palestinians, though it is first and foremost. It's also a betrayal of the Arab street. And this marks the degeneration of the leadership of those countries. Sisi in particular has turned Egypt from the once beating heart of the Arab world into the chicken heart of the Arab world. He is relying on the $2 billion per year subvention from Washington. He's being bought and paid for, and history will certainly not be kind. I think this alliance will not last. I think there are far too many contradictions for it to last. I think it's a backhanded compliment to Iran because it is in fear of Iran that has been forged, and that's obviously testament to Iran's growing strength and influence in the region and beyond. They say that adversity makes the weak weaker and the strong stronger. In Iran's case, it's clearly the latter. So it'll be interesting to see how their own peoples treat this alliance. I think the clock is ticking on these countries in terms of their own street, their own masses, and I think revolution is just around the corner.
Thank you very much. Mr. Khoshchashm, now Anthony Blinken, Anthony Blinken's remarks regarding this issue. Do you have any comments to make on that?
Hello, and thanks for having me. Well, as your other guest said, this is not just a betrayal of the Muslim community as well as the Quranic teachings that always urge support for the oppressed, especially for those that are oppressed Muslims, but also it's a betrayal of Arab nationalism. And this is, I believe, a very strategic mistake by these Arab states, since everyone knows that Iran and Israel are arch foes, so there is growing confrontation as the U.S. is withdrawing, retreating from the region. They have been trying to push Israel further to the front row, to the stage, to the center stage, in order to strike, alliances with some of these Arab states, in order to push insecurities further to the lands, further to the east, and project problems that they have with security inside the on the occupied territories to the lands around the Persian Gulf. And this means that these Arab states are not going to share security with or enhance their security levels through such relationship with the Israeli regime, but they are actually partnering with Israel in the lack of security and the problems that Israel has. Israel has even failed, to provide security on occupied territories. We saw what happened in the martyrdom seeking operation just a few days ago, and we all saw the quarrel between the Knesset member as well as the internal security minister of the Zionist regime. And now these problems, Israel is seeking to project these problems to areas around the Persian Gulf. So these Arab states are inviting lack of security. As a matter of fact, they are not going to enhance their security levels, and they will be in trouble, not only from outside, but also from inside, from the domestic Muslim population that would not tolerate such a betrayal of Islamic values and a betrayal of the Palestinians. And, the Israelis are trying to make use of these smaller states, Arab states, in order to wear off Iran's support for the Palestinians. So they are trying to use them as hurdles and impediments to the Iranian support and backup for the Palestinians that are fighting for their freedom and the freedom of their lands. And they're resisting against Israeli occupation, bombing, and wild and barbaric behavior towards the oppressed Palestinian community. So that's one of the strategic goals and objectives that Israel has.
Thank you very much. Mustafa Khoshchashm, journalist and political commentator out of Tehran, and John White, writer and political analyst out of Edinburgh. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen for sharing your thoughts with us on this edition of the News Review. And thanks to all of you for following us.
Moving on, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, has left Tehran for China to attend the third meeting of foreign ministers of the country's neighboring Afghanistan. Chinese state counselor and foreign minister Wang Yi will host a two-day meeting in Tunghi Anhui province starting from Wednesday. top diplomats from Pakistan, Iran, Russia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan, and the acting foreign minister of Afghanistan's interim government will be in attendance. The meeting will reportedly focus on humanitarian assistance and a call for the U.S. to return Afghan's frozen assets. The first meeting was chaired virtually by Pakistan in September 2021, a day after the Taliban announced the formation of an interim government in Kabul. Iran hosted a second round of meeting in October last year. The supporters of opposition political parties in Pakistan have staged a rally against Prime Minister Imran Khan, the capital of Islamabad. The rally was held hours after Parliament took up a no-confidence motion pushed by opposition lawmakers to remove Imran Khan. The House will begin a debate on the motion Thursday, and a vote will be held within 7 days. Imran Khan lost the Parliament in majority with a series of defections from his Tehreek-e-Insaf party, leaving him reliant on coalition allies to stay in power. His opponents believe that they have enough votes to unseat him. Pakistan is grappling with soaring inflation, unemployment, with allegations of corruption and mismanagement plaguing the government. Khan says that a foreign-funded plot is underway to topple him. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
With spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at IRIB English Radio wish you happiness, prosperity, and good health. Nowruz, symbol of peace and friendship. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with another episode of Nowruz special series. Nowruz is the time of refreshment of the nature. Flowers and trees blossom and grasses sprout out of the earth. Ices melt and rush toward plains in streams and rivers. All these inspire happiness and they are the blessings of God for mankind. Human beings from all enjoy these blessings and beauties. This is the thought that is absolutely against the monopoly and excessiveness. It is based on freedom and equality of men. And Nowruz has been conveying this message for millennia. Nowruz reminds human beings that darkness, cold, and evils should be put behind, and we should think of a bright, green, and beautiful future. The nature is a very good teacher if we hear its message. Every year, Nowruz repeats its lessons in the form of traditions and customs. One of these customs is the setting of half-seen tablecloth. Iranians have set this special tablecloth a few hours before the turn of the year for centuries. This tablecloth includes mainly seven items, beginning with the Farsi letter of Sin, S in English. These items include sabze, or green sprouts of wheat, peas, or lentils, symbolizing freshness, revival, and rebirth. It shows the rebirth of the nature and putting behind the cold winter. Sabze is often put with sombol or hyacinth to remind us that there is death and darkness. Sabze also teaches us that we should forget darkness and evil and stick to joy and generosity like the nature. The second item on Haftsin tablecloth is sib or apple, symbolizing sweetness, beauty, and life. It also symbolizes health. Iranians put apple in the tablecloth to wish health and better life for all. This is a good aspiration for all, especially in the tough conditions that the unholy coronavirus has imposed on the life of nearly 8 billion people on planet Earth. Samanu, or fresh wheat shoots pudding, is another ingredient of Haftsin tablecloth. It also symbolizes health and amplitude. It indicates wishing a blessed year and healthy food for all. For centuries, and especially recent decades, powerful governments have prevented the access of poor nations to healthy and adequate food. They have accumulated millions of tons of food while there are hundreds of millions of hungry people in various parts of the world. Seer or garlic, symbolizing health and disinfection, is another item on Haftsin tablecloth. Another item on Haftsin tablecloth is sirke or vinegar as the symbol of patience. Garlic and vinegar can also symbolize cleanness and disinfection. These two items symbolize removal of all evils and pollutions. They remind us that we should start the new year with warding off enmities and grudges. They teach us to refresh our hearts and souls like the nature. Somag, or sumac, is the next item on Haftsin tablecloth. It symbolizes life and vividness. The last item on this tablecloth is senjed. Senjed, or oleaster fruit, symbolizes love and rationality. These two items, sumac and oleaster fruit, also symbolize love and altruism. Ancient Iranians believed that the blossoms of oleaster increase love and bring the hearts together like the seeds of sumac. These were the seven items on Haftsin tablecloth, which begin with the Farsi letter Sin, S in English. However, it is also believed that seke, or coin, is another item on Haftsin tablecloth. Coins are put on Haftsin tablecloth to show wealth and richness. A brief look at Nowruz traditions reveals that they can bolster social relations and enhance friendship among human beings. Nowruz customs can act as role models for governments to give up selfishness and think on closer ties and sustainable peace. Nowruz traditions teach us to abandon excessive demands and supremacy over other fellow men. They stress altruism and generosity. Nowruz is rich in the culture of love and justice for all. It reprimands usurpation of the rights and properties of others. These are the cultural roots that have supported Nowruz for 3 millennia. That's why Islam approves of many Nowruz customs and traditions. Nowruz is a good opportunity to ponder upon our deeds and repent for evil deeds and thoughts. The Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says that any day on which we do not commit sin is Nowruz, meaning new day. The greatest sin is injustice, and Nowruz conveys the message of justice for all. Iranians always put a copy of the Noble Quran on half-thin tablecloth to indicate that they follow the teachings of the Quran alongside national feast. Well, dear listeners, in this new year, we appeal to God to refresh our hearts like the nature. Amen.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of RIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
The condition of the Shia movement, which was a movement led by the Imams, a movement in the political sense, is an activity, an organized activity against the authority, to overthrow an authority, a regime, and to establish a new government. One of the things we see, just to give us an example so we can understand a little better perhaps, a contemporary example of a movement that was similar in many ways. In fact, it was the continuation of the movement of the Ahlul Bayt, using the methods and the tactics of the Ahlul Bayt, was the movement of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini spoke against the regime with provocative language and took stances against the regime. Others would decide that it's better if we speak in a softer tone. Imam Khomeini deliberately, that tone of Imam Khomeini rallied up and gave courage to a good number of people, gave them the energy. They had the ideological foundations. They knew what was happening was wrong, but they didn't have the motivation to come forward. When they see that leader speaking in that way, they came forward. With that, Imam Khomeini was imprisoned, the initial stages of it. Imprisonment, if he would stand strong in prison, which he did, and getting that data out, that will encourage more people to come forward, which it did. And it forced the government to have to release him. After they released him, Imam Khomeini continued and took more firm stances against the regime. They sent him to exile. In exile, he continued those strong stances. And this led to more and more people getting empowered, getting encouraged, gaining courage, learning from the sacrifice of the leader to sacrifice. This was what Imam al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi, did during his time. And we've got to learn that. This is where it connects to us today. Brothers, sisters, we are at a very important period in the history of mankind. We are living at a time where the majority of the people of the world understand that the elite of the world are corrupt and they're causing injustice. the time where people lived in faraway places, disconnected. They didn't know of the crimes in this region and that region. They were preoccupied with their own local matters in such a way where they didn't have access to. That's all long gone. The people throughout the world understand that the conditions that we're living in are unjust. Governments are unjust. The world elite are unjust. They understand all of that. The courage to come out and stand against these governments, it comes about here and there. You see outrage by people. You see them pouring out on the streets in different countries. In France, it's been, I don't know how many years now it's been. It's been over a year. I know that, but I don't know if it's 2 years yet or not. Every Saturday they were coming out. In the Muslim world, in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Libya, in Yemen, in Arabia, they call Saudi Arabia, in Bahrain, you have people coming out. You have conditions like this. In the U.S., we had the riots, if we can call them that, which in at least some cities they were, the protests, the outrage of the people against the atrocities of the state, of the government. But it's short-lived. Generally, even in those cases, if you look, the numbers of people, they're not too many. They're not enough. They're not enough. In order to get more and more people to have the courage to stand, to rise, we as followers of the Ahlul Bayt have got to take a lead on this. Under the guidance of the Ahlul Bayt, under the guidance of Imam Al-Kadhim, salamullah alayhi. We need to speak more clearly against the injustice. We need to speak more openly about how this injustice needs to come to an end. The people need to rise and overthrow these regimes. We need to be very explicit, very open, very using very strong anti-establishment language that Imam Al-Kadhim salamullah alayhi used. He provoked the regime to imprison him and then stood strong in prison. We've got to do the same. Whether we get imprisoned or we don't know what's going to happen. Not all the companions of Imam Al-Kadhim were imprisoned either. Some were. Some weren't. But we hope that we resemble Imam Al-Kadhim. How is it that we call ourselves the Shia of Imam Al-Kadhim? He was imprisoned and we're not. How can we be the followers of an Imam who spoke against the authorities in ways that caused them to not only imprison him, but to torture him? We call ourselves his followers, and we're not willing to do that. At times where there are similarities and we do have this taklif, let them imprison us, and let us stand strong in prison, and let them kill us. That will only hasten the coming of the Imam. That will only hasten the overthrow of these tyrannies. That will only hasten the gathering of larger numbers in support of the overthrow of these regimes and the establishment of the government of justice. It will show the direction, as the Quran says, the Ahlul Bayt have said, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, learning from those two sources, said that the shuhada will be the lanterns, the beacons that will guide others. Let them imprison us. Let them torture us. Let them kill us. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will make us beacons that will shed light in the darkness of this world and guide masses. And we will see, inshallah, the Imam of our time, ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, soon. It is soon, inshallah. It is soon. We hope that we are like those who have engaged in this in the different parts of the world, the likes of Sheikh Zakzaki, that has engaged in this. The imprisonment of Sheikh Zakzaki, inshallah, with him standing firm, is going to encourage more people throughout the globe, as we have seen it has. This is continuing the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, establishing them today. And inshallah, we will become part of that. May Allah bless the souls of those who did that, who were imprisoned, who were tortured, who died in torture, who became shuhada under torture, whatever other taklif they had, and they became shuhada. And we hope that we have the tawfiq to join them, inshallah. Sallallahu alayk, ya Aba al-Hasan, ya Musa ibn Ja'far. Let's take our hearts to call the main.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight. Without any declared candidacy and with little spent on Republican candidates, the purpose of former US President Donald Trump's war chest remains opaque. We have prepared for you an article written by Edward Helmore. The piece is titled Questions Abound as Trump Raises and Hoards Huge Sums of 2024 Cash. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Donald Trump's ferocious money-raising machine, powered in equal measure by grassroots giving and large individual and corporate donations, has never really stopped turning, and it is currently raising huge sums of cash. As of this month, Donald Trump has $108,046,100 saved in his Save America political fund, more than the Republican and Democratic National Committees combined, and 12 times as much as the fund PAC for the Future for the Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. And all of that has been raised while Trump's own ambitions remain unclear. Though his grip on the Republican Party remains tight and he has waged an endorsement war against his opponents, the big question over whether Donald Trump will run again for the White House remains unanswered. Without any declared candidacy, his war chest purpose and thus also that of its master is unclear, and deliberately so. Donald Trump cannot easily spend the money on himself should he decide to run in 2024. Save America is registered as a leadership PAC, or political action committee, not a campaign tool for himself. According to its leadership purpose of supporting Republican candidates going into this year's hotly contested midterm elections, yet Trump is not spending much. Despite Donald Trump's more than 120 Republican endorsements, and even as Democrats pour money into their effort to retain control of Congress, the massive accumulation of cash under his control raises the question, what is it for? Donald Trump has not stopped raising money since he left office, either through thousands of small donations raised at Trump rallies or online, or via the big donor money machine that Democrats cannot match, being schmoozed by Trump himself on the golf course and in the dining room at Mar-a-Lago. Since Trump founded Save America in November of 2020, the group has raised $124 million. The largest war chest ever built by an ex-president, but spent only about $14 million, or around 11% of the fund. In contrast, the main fund for supporting Senate Republican candidates has spent about 80% of its $135 million it raised since the start of 2021, while its main fund for congressional candidates has spent half of the $162 million it has raised in the same period. The question of Trump's PAC money is beginning to vex strategists on both sides of the political divide. It could be a fund designed to ensure the loyalty of Republican allies forming a new power base within the party. Or he may have other designs, namely securing his own path forward
by securing the political future of loyalists. The Democratic consultant Carly Cooperman said it's consistent with Trump's political priorities. Trump first, above everything else, and makes him well-positioned for a presidential run in 2024. Carly Cooperman added, it's possible he decides to make a big splash in competitive races as we get closer to the midterm elections. But above all, Trump's ability to raise large sums of money makes him even more powerful in the Republican Party. According to FEC financial disclosures, Save America spent more than $3 million on events through February, $2 million in consulting services, including to law firms representing witnesses sought by committee investigating the 6th of January Capitol riot, including the Trump aide, Dan Scavino, and Trump spokesperson, Taylor Budowich. It also spent $300,000 on advertisements, $200,000 in contributions to Republican congressional candidates, and at least $170,000 at hotels owned by Donald Trump for lodging, meals, and the renting of hotel facilities. Taylor Budowich, communications director for both Save America and Donald Trump, told Reuters news agency that the former president was supporting candidates through direct contributions, rallies, and joint fundraisers. In other words, efforts that bind candidates to the former president. Taylor Budowich told Reuters news agency, Save America will not be telegraphing specific tactics or expenditures through the press. Every dollar raised will go to ensuring President Trump's America First agenda is advanced through his endorsed candidates and causes. Michael Beckel of Issue One, a nonpartisan group that advocates for campaign finance reform, says, there is a lot of leeway on how the funds are spent. While he remains an unofficial candidate, he can build his brand, draw further attention to himself by hosting large rallies, ostensibly to support other candidates in other states, but every rally has the upside of helping to boost his visibility and his brand. Donald Trump is certainly on the move, holding rallies across the United States with the usual aim of endorsing local supportive politicians. In some ways, it's a substitute for social media blackout. In another, it's Trump's connecting with his base in the way that has served him in the past. Recently, Donald Trump held a rally in South Carolina in support of Russell Fry, a state representative he endorsed to challenge the incumbent Republican Congressman Tom Rice. Russell Fry spoke briefly before handing the podium back to Trump, who continued for 20 minutes. Donald Trump teased, "In 2024, we are going to take back that beautiful White House. I wonder who will do that. I wonder." But the consequences from staying from Trump's agenda are also apparent. Recently, the former president withdrew his endorsement of Mo Brooks for going woke after the Alabama Senate candidate expressed doubt that the 2020 presidential election was a fraud. As Donald Trump withdrew his endorsement, he said, "Mo Brooks of Alabama made a horrible mistake recently when he went woke," and stated, referring to the 2020 presidential election scam, "Put that behind you. Put that behind you." But Trump's enduring influence efforts are not limited to rallies or building his power base. Recently, the website Axios reported that Donald Trump Jr. is planning to launch a mobile news app after the bumpy launch of Truth Social, a Trump-aligned social media network that encourages an open, free, and honest global conversation without discriminating against political ideology. The aggregator site comes with high ambitions to compete with Apple and Google's new aggregators, and to supplant the Drudge Report, that has lost traffic and influence since founder Matt Drudge undercut the White House message on COVID deaths at the peak of the pandemic. A spokesman said that the news site, MXM, or Minute by Minute, will carry the tag mainstream news without the mainstream bias and would carry news from a variety of publishers across the ideological spectrum. With about 12 employees, an ideologically copacetic news site would be a useful tool, but it is still Trump's money that is the focus of interest when it comes to his future ambitions. Under election finance laws, should Donald Trump decide to run in 2024, he would have to start a new campaign fund. His previous PAC committee, Donald J. Trump for President, since renamed the Make America Great Again PAC, still has more than $6 million in it, after raising $13 million in 2021. Beckel explained, the life of a political action committee after a candidate leaves office can morph to supporting other candidates. The bulk of the money Donald Trump has been raising is for Save America, but he also has a conduit vehicle, so a donor can write one check and is split between buckets according to political contribution limits. Beckel added, but how Donald Trump will spend the money remains an open question. He could shape the 2022 midterm elections or other future elections significantly if he decides to unleash it. One can predict from how other former presidents or politicians have spent their money, but Donald Trump is not a conventional politician.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 3, 2016 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the occasion of 27th anniversary of Imam Khomeini's passing. The speech was delivered at Imam Khomeini's shrine in Tehran, Iran.
Take note, it is 100 years now that America and England have been pressuring the people of Palestine. They have been doing so before the formation of the Zionist regime in the year 1948 and after that, till this day. Well, this is how global imperialism moves. Islam cannot remain silent on this matter. The Islamic government cannot see this and be indifferent. Global imperialism is directly helping those who bomb the people of Yemen. America is openly and directly helping with the bombardment of Yemen. Which areas do they bomb? The front lines? No, they bomb hospitals, markets, schools, and public squares. America is helping them. Well, the Islamic Republic cannot remain indifferent towards these issues. These two systems are battling one another. They are opposed to one another by nature. How can this enmity be defined? America launched the coup d'etat of the 28th of Mordad and toppled the national government. America has been displaying enmity towards us from the beginning of the revolution until today. During the time of Tagut, Pahlavi era, America established Savak, which tortures the people and revolutionary fighters of Iran.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In the 8-year war, America did its best to help our enemy. America struck down one of our passenger planes. America struck our own platforms. America imposed sanctions on us. Is this not enmity? Any individual and orientation that works for Islam, or in the name of Islam, trust America. They have made a grave mistake, which will be slapped in the face for, as they were slapped in the past. In recent years, Islamic orientations trusted and established a friendship with Americans because of their interest. Because of political wisdom, they refer to this as a political wisdom. And because of tactical reasons, they claimed it was necessary for tactical moves. Consequently, they were punished and felt that slap across their face. And in the present time, they are enduring disasters that originated from that mistake. Of course, we have many small and big enemies. We have small and cruel enemies as well. But the main enmity comes from America and from England.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.